Hello and welcome to Fidelity Connects, the Fidelity Investments Canada podcast, connecting you to the world of investing and helping you stay ahead. Today's podcast features Tom Stevenson, Investment Director at Fidelity International, based in London. In this episode, Tom and host Pamela Ritchie discuss the impact of COVID-19 and the US election on the markets in Europe and the UK. He will also shed light on his outlook for the global markets as we head into 2021, and what this new year could bring for equities and fixed income. Tom believes that the positive vaccine news has driven the markets enormously, as prospects of getting back to normal next year has risen. Today's podcast was recorded on Friday, December 4th, 2020. The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect those of Fidelity Investments Canada ULC or its affiliates. This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be construed as investment, tax, or legal advice. It is not an offer to sell or buy, or an endorsement, recommendation, or sponsorship of any entity or security cited. Read a fund's prospectus before investing. Funds are not guaranteed. Their values change frequently, and past performance may not be repeated. Fees, expenses, and commissions are all associated with fund investments.
Throughout market history, some might characterize periods following recessions to be good times to be in markets for cyclical and for other reasons. And 2021, following the COVID-19 related economic devastation with now possible vaccines in place, could be one of those years. We're going to take a look at what the year ahead might have in store and consider forces that could shape the near term and what strategies might be the prudent course. We're happy to be joined today by Fidelity's Investment Director, Tom Stevenson. He's joining us from London. Tom is also a columnist for The Telegraph and a regular broadcaster on radio, television, and podcasts. A warm welcome to you, Tom. Good to see you.
Thanks, Pamela. Nice to be back again.
You and the rest of the UK are coming out, well, parts of the UK are coming out of a lockdown this week. How has it gone? Has it been useful from a numbers perspective?
Yes, it has. It's quite clear that the national lockdown that we've just been through, we had a 4-week lockdown which ended on Wednesday, and we're just beginning to see the numbers coming through that suggest that, it has clearly put a lid on the rise in infections that we were seeing 4 or 5 weeks ago. So yeah, that's good news. We've gone into a regional lockdown situation now, which in some ways is almost as onerous as the national lockdown for those regions that are most affected. You know, pubs and restaurants still closed in some areas.
And what's next and what's been announced is the vaccine rollout, approvals that have been made and so forth in the UK, but really across Europe, all the plans are being made for this rollout. Any thoughts on what that looks like, slightly ahead of perhaps what North America's rollout is going to look like, or at least maybe different in some way? Can you shed some light?
Yeah, I mean, it does seem that the approval process has been accelerated here. It's gone through pretty quickly. Indeed, I mean, we have had some sort of some critical comments about the speed with which the process has happened over here. It's going to be very interesting to see what the appetite is among people for having this vaccination. I mean, clearly these things normally take a lot longer. The process is much more thorough and rigorous than we've had time to. So, I think it's great that it's happening, but it remains to be seen just what the appetite is from people to have this vaccination. But it's clearly driven the markets enormously.
Well, and let's go there. We're gonna come back around. You have sort of a number of very interesting thoughts on where the market goes next year. But why don't we just begin with the vaccine, in the sense that the November that was sort of extraordinary, and it coincided obviously with the U.S. presidential election, but the announcement of the vaccine just days later. I mean, put into perspective what has changed.
Yeah, I mean, I think what the news on the vaccinations has done is raised the prospect that we really could get back to some kind of normality next year. And, you know, there is this enormous pent up consumer demand that's waiting to be unlocked. And the vaccination, you know, was clearly the key to unlock that reopening of the economy. So, you know, I'm not surprised that we had this, you know, this enormous sort of return of animal spirits in November. I am surprised by the scale of it. I mean, I think, you know, November turned out to be a pretty extraordinary month in the markets. You mentioned the US presidential election. That was clearly a factor, but by itself, it would not have been enough. Add in the vaccination part of the equation as well, and you know, that was a fantastic cocktail of events to drive markets higher.
It was sort of incredible, and the sentiment, obviously, as you said, sort of the enthusiasm. Today we saw U.S. jobs, the numbers coming out for the month of November. You know, big numbers when I look at it from other countries' perspective, but nowhere near what they had expected or hoped for, and yet markets are okay with that. I don't know if that means stimulus is coming or what it means markets are looking through.
Yeah, well, I think those numbers were fairly disappointing. You know, I think that they came in, what was it, 245,000. It was about half the level that was expected, I think you actually highlight a very important point there, because one of the key drivers of markets at the moment is this promise of coordinated fiscal and monetary stimulus. And, you know, the positive side of slightly disappointing economic numbers like the non-farm payrolls is it does suggest that that stimulus is not going to be choked off. It's going to keep coming. Because if you look at the risks to the bull market scenario, well, one of the key ones is that stimulus is taken away too quickly. And so, you know, this sort of Goldilocks set of numbers, which are, you know, OK, but not that OK, is probably the best that investors can hope for, actually. And that, and we've seen that today in the markets. I mean, on both sides of the Atlantic, markets are pretty buoyant today.
And one of your points is actually in a Telegraph article that we read through, you published it this week, looking at 2021 and the vaccine is a piece of it, but also the stimulus just going forward, swimming around in the markets through next year is one of the reasons for sort of this thought that buoyancy will continue.
Yes, I think that's right. I think, you know, you put all of that together, you add it to the fact that company results are coming through, you know, a bit stronger than expected. Third quarter earnings season was pretty strong. You add all of that together, and I think that, you know, 2021 does look like being a better year in the markets. And that's clearly the view that investors have taken. And you know, you put those pieces in place in November, and we had that extraordinary rise of, you know, what was it, about 13% for the MSCI World Index. European shares actually were even stronger, about 15% in Europe. The US, which is obviously more dominated by the kinds of stocks which are not beneficiaries necessarily of opening up, the tech stocks, was a bit less. But even in the US, an 11% rise. So it's pretty much across the board. People have sort of talked about this as being a bull market of everything, you know, with the exception of US treasuries and gold, the two sort of most obvious safe havens, everything's on the way up.
Does that give you pause?
Yeah, it does. It does give me pause. And you know, I've been around in the markets for long enough to remember 20 years ago when we really last had this sort of sense of euphoria in the markets, which we haven't experienced in the 11 years since the financial crisis. It's been a really unloved bull market. It's been very grudging. You know, markets have gone up, but people haven't really believed in it until the last month or so. And suddenly we've had this return of animal spirits that, you know, risk appetite has increased. And it just reminds me a little bit of what happened 20 years ago in 98, 99, as markets got into that dot-com bubble. You know, it became widespread. Someone was making a bit of money. They were telling someone else they were making a bit of money. We had this fear of missing out, and it sort of feeds on itself. And I just wonder whether we're moving into that sort of phase again, where it becomes self-fulfilling, self-feeding. I think we're a long way off the kind of exuberance that we got at the top of the market 20 years ago, but I suspect we're on our way towards it.
One of the things pushing equities higher is less interest in the bond market. I mean, that is just seems to be a fact. We have interest rates. We know where they are. We've been promised they'll be low for a long, long time. And so it seems to, there are rotations all over the place to small caps, to EM, to Europe, but also from the bond market just into equities generally. What does that present as an opportunity or something to be flagged again for 2021?
Well, I think it's a real factor in the performance of the equity market, because if you think about the size of the bond market, you think about how much money has been parked in money market funds, but in bonds generally. If some of that money starts flowing back into the equity market, and we saw over a 3-week period in November, we had something like $90 billion flowing into equity funds. You know, that was the highest ever for a 3-week period. That money's coming from somewhere, and I suspect a lot of it is coming from those places where it had been parked, safe havens. And if that continues, then I think that is a serious bull point for the equity market.
Let's talk a little bit about the other rotations. There are many of them, as I said, in the market right now in equities. There's certainly a rotation. The U.S. dollar has a lot to do with this too. Emerging markets to Europe, as you said. We've been watching the euro. I wonder when policymakers get worried about euro levels. But in any case, we see the rotation to interest in stocks across Europe. Tell us a bit about that, how you look at that. We might zero in on the UK in a minute after that, but just that part of the rotation.
Yeah, I mean, as you say, there are lots of rotations going on, because it does feel like something of a watershed moment in markets. I think we've got this rotation from growth into value. That is really happening. If you look at the risers and the fallers in any market, but I mean, I've been looking just today at the UK market. I mean, you know, the winners are these cyclical value-related stocks, the things that have been beaten up most during the pandemic. So we've got that rotation going on. But, you know, related to that is a rotation away from the markets which are most defensive and growth-oriented, like the US, towards markets which will do well in a generalised economic recovery. And emerging markets clearly fall into that category, especially if the dollar declines, and we're seeing the dollar weaken. So I think a lot of people feel that emerging markets will be a strong performer next year. But I mean, you talked earlier on about, you know, does this give you pause for thought? You know, one thing that really does give me pause for thought is that everyone is saying the same thing at the moment. You know, everyone's talking about this growth to value rotation. Everyone's talking about, you know, non-US markets outperforming the US. When everyone starts talking about the same thing, that's not a very good sign.
Yeah, I know. It just sort of, it's becoming somewhat ubiquitous in terms of the, maybe we don't have enough to talk about. I mean, that could also be the result of staying at home. It's sort of the thing we're zeroing in on, Netflix and the stock markets. I don't know about that, but certainly a huge interest within this. And we actually spoke to Nicole Connolly, who's the head of ESG for Fidelity across sort of North America and so on yesterday. So we got some very interesting points on sustainable investing. But it looks like there's no reason for that to be interrupted, that interest. I mean, so far, it's only gaining. Is that part of your thesis for the years to come?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I really think that looking forward to the next year, and indeed the years beyond that, I think the sustainability theme in investment is absolutely here to stay. We've done research here. I think we've talked about it in the past, which shows this connection between sustainability and stock market performance. There is a clear positive correlation between the two. I think people are understanding that. And I think the pandemic has focused attention on the social aspects as well as the environmental aspects of ESG. And yeah, so I think that, you know, sustainability will be a key focus next year.
It's interesting how that ultimately will be layered over other, as we said, rotations, you know, layered over EM layered over so-called value stocks, smaller cap. It'll just be fascinating to watch this all. But as you say, it just seems full steam ahead. We'll take a look at Europe specifically, and actually the UK. I mean, there's no way not to talk about Brexit. I mean, the clock is seriously ticking here, although I feel like we've been here before. Bring us up to date on what we need to know at this moment about whether Brexit will actually be a deal.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like we've said that the clock is ticking and we're at crunch time many times in the past. I mean, we really must be at crunch time now because, you know, the year end is a cutoff and we're now in the final month of the year. We're in December. Just looking today at the headlines, there is clearly some last minute jockeying for position by both sides. They're beginning to play slightly hardball at the moment. And I suspect that I actually take that as a bit of a positive, because what that's telling me is that both sides think that we are within reach of some kind of a trade deal. And because of that, each side is making sure that they don't give too much away at the last minute. So it's the real sort of crunch time in these talks. But, you know, if you look at the headlines today, doesn't look very positive. But then look what the stock market has done today, up very strongly. I think that is saying, you know, we see this as last minute posturing rather than something really to be concerned about.
So let's say that sort of comes to the fore in the next, I don't know, week or like soon, obviously. Is there in fact a bit of a relief trade or relief rally on that? Or have we just already been hearing about it and therefore doesn't cause a full liftoff? How do you look at that?
Well, I'm not sure that there will be a massive relief rally on this, because I think people are, you know, starting to price it in. But having said that, I think that the underperformance of the UK market recently and actually over quite a long period has been so significant and so meaningful that any slightly bit of good news is going to impact positively on the market. I think the risk reward ratio for UK investors is pretty favourable at the moment. Valuations are pretty compelling, and I think a lot of the bad news has already been priced in. So the UK is definitely one of my more positive calls for 2021.
Let me ask you this. Now that we have all worked from home, traders have traded from offsite locations, the market has kept its liquidity. It's sort of one of the surprises, I think, for a lot of people this year, how well market technicals have continued to occur. Does it matter whether London is or isn't the physical location in the same way for sort of the European financial markets? Does that debate get muted slightly? It doesn't have to move to Paris or Dublin, or, I mean, what do you think?
Yes, I think the UK has a lot of advantages, you know, in terms of time zone and language and just the surrounding infrastructure of legal services, accountancy, and all of the sort of peripheral ancillary services that make it possible to trade. And so I think that being able to trade from home, you know, means that location is less important than it was. But I think physical location is still important.
Okay, interesting. When we look to the election in the United States, the Biden administration has made many announcements about who will be in various positions. Janet Yellen is certainly one that speaks to the fact the administration is likely to work closely with the Fed, or maybe more closely with the Fed. What does it mean on the tax front? What does it mean on some of the blue wave discussions that people had and what it would mean for the economy one way or the other going into 2021? Do you see that landscape changing?
Well, I mean, I think a lot depends on what happens in early January in Georgia, in this final sort of Senate piece of the jigsaw. Because, you know, at the moment, the markets are working on the assumption that we have a Democrat in the White House and we have a very narrow Republican majority in the Senate. And that divided government is actually good news as far as investors are concerned. Gridlock is good in Washington. So I think if it stays that way, I think people will be happy. If we get a sort of small Democrat majority in the Senate, which is still possible with the casting vote of the vice president, then I think that at the margin makes some of the more negative things a bit more likely. So it makes tax rises a bit more likely. But do you know what? I think the market is fairly happy with the setup in Washington. It seems balanced enough that nothing too serious is going to happen to upset the apple cart.
Interesting. Yeah, it's perhaps one of the scenarios people didn't think about as much until perhaps the days just before the election. It's an interesting outcome. Lots of questions coming in here, not unlike in London, where you have metals and materials making up a good chunk of the industry there. In Canada, it's the same thing. The TSX is made up of lots of metals and materials and so on. And I find we're always interested in Canada, you know, on where some of these commodity prices are going. So the question rolling in here, with a global push towards carbon neutrality, do you see a rising demand in copper, other base metals, batteries to replace carbon fuels? How do you look at that space?
Well, if you look at the price of those metals, you know, over the last few weeks, that is painting a really positive picture for demand. And you know, clearly, demand for some of those metals comes from this transition of the economy to a more sustainable future in terms of electric vehicles, etc. But I mean, we talked earlier on about the performance of some of those cyclical sectors. And you know, if I look at the leaderboard over the last month, as I was doing just before we came on air, actually, you know, the Anglo Americans, the Glencores, the BHPs, you know, they are right up there, you know. So though that sector is I think a real beneficiary of this opening up trade that we're seeing.
Interesting. A new CEO on the books, I think, for Glencore, at least the current CEO on his way out, I noticed this morning. Another question rolling in here. How do you see the valuation of the pound going forward?
Yeah, the pound is pretty strong at the moment. I mean, I say pretty strong. I mean, it's all relative by recent history. But I mean, at $1.35, you know, that's as high as it's been in the last year. So you talked about a sort of relief rally. I think if we do get a deal on Brexit, then we may see a little bit of a further push on the pound, which is not necessarily good news for the equity market, because they tend to move in opposite directions here in the UK. But I think I think it's quite asymmetric. I think that the pound could go a little bit higher. I think if we get a bad Brexit outcome, then there could be a bit more downside.
Interesting. Okay, it's really something we're kind of watching as it rolls in, this story. Another question. We started out kind of talking about vaccines and, you know, where things are going. This question has come in. Everyone is also talking about vaccine development, but this investor says nobody is talking about the fact that 90% the effectiveness of the vaccine is sort of unprecedented, this high number of effectiveness. Do you see hypersensitivity in the market if the vaccine isn't rolled out effectively, or if there are issues with the vaccine?
Well, I think that's one of the key sort of question marks over this whole sort of bullish case that we've seen in recent weeks. I mean, you know, I think there is a world of difference between finding a vaccine and even finding a, you know, what seems to be a very effective vaccine, and actually rolling it out to, you know, effectively 7 billion people around the world. And, you know, that is a massive logistical task, which will be easier in some countries than in others. So, you know, I think there's still quite a lot that can go wrong, and things that can go wrong around the vaccine. We've had the sort of, sometimes it's better to travel than to arrive. And, you know, clearly, you know, the early news on the vaccine is great. You know, everyone has sort of breathed a sigh of relief. Oh, we're getting back to normal. But, you know, we've got the hard yards to do now.
Yeah, it's fascinating. And yesterday we saw, you know, just what is available on in terms of supply chains is tough to predict through some of this. Is there anything else across Europe that you're watching particularly carefully? You know, is the ECB we seem to see Christine Lagarde at the ready to do pretty much whatever is needed. But what are some of the nuances with the ECB position in the next year?
Well, I think the ECB needs to do something. And as you say, you know, Christine Lagarde stands ready to act. And I think that that's absolutely right, because, you know, if you look at what's happening with in Europe with the second wave and the lockdowns that we've had, not just here in the UK, but across Europe, you know, that recovery is pretty fragile. And I think that the central bank in Europe is going to have to step up and increase that quantitative easing program if it's going to, you know, keep on top of things here.
Very interesting. I think that it's what would be sort of the three things you'd like to leave investors with in terms of where things can go on sort of a positive sense in 2021, and, you know, being maybe one leveling piece.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think, you know, I think the positives are, you know, on the vaccine front, clearly a positive. On the fiscal and monetary stimulus, clearly a positive. I think those wrap up together to deliver a strong backdrop for equity markets in 2021. My caveat to all of that is the speed with which animal spirits have returned, and, you know, the unanimity of positive sentiment towards the equity market at the moment. I just want a bit of dissent. I want some people saying, no, we're not off to the races. And at the moment, it doesn't feel like anyone is offering that dissenting voice.
When we spoke earlier about, you know, big rotation of money, or money coming out of the bond market into the equity market as one of the pieces of why things look very bullish for stock markets next year. But where is the downside protection? I mean, bonds are not the only downside protection, but they're certainly one of them. Do you see any issues with that?
Yeah, I mean, you know, a balanced portfolio is necessary. And one of the problems with the bond market being where it is in terms of the level of yields is that there is a risk that the bond market is no longer able to perform that function as a diversifier. And if bonds are not doing it, then investors are going to have to look elsewhere for it, you know, alternative investments. And it's quite hard to see what could replace the bond market, the scale of the bond market in that diversification quest. So I think that is a slight concern.
Final question coming in here. What is your outlook for gold? I mean, that can be a diversifier. It hasn't really been through much of this year, really. But how do you look at gold?
Well, do you know what? I think gold has been a good diversifier. It's not performed well recently, but I think that's because it's doing its job as a diversifier. As the equity market has picked up, you know, the gold market has come off the boil. So it depends what you're using gold for. If you're using it for growth, then you may be a bit disappointed in the performance of recent weeks. If you're using it as a diversifier, as an insurance policy, then I think it's done its job.
Fascinating. We'll leave it on that note. It's fabulous to get your thoughts for the year to come. I know we'll look forward to speaking to you in the year to come. Tom, thank you very much, and have a good weekend.
Thanks very much, Pamela.
Thank you for listening to the Fidelity Connects podcast. For more information on future live webcasts, please visit fidelity.ca. Don't forget to follow Fidelity Canada on Twitter and subscribe to Fidelity Connects on your podcast platform of choice.